London shook her head vigorously. "Have you lost your mind? That's the last person in the world we need. That bitch is a loose cannon, and her only way of getting shit done is riding dick and killing dudes. I know Daddy in Vegas find those skills of hers useful, but we don't need them in this situation. I get what you're saying, but I will ride as many dicks and slit as many throats as I need to if it's gonna help me find those bastards. So, you best be prepared to do whatever it takes, or keep your ass home, because I don't need you or anyone else getting in my way."
Larry, 58.
"Are you sure about this?" Curtis asked.
"Not many things I'm sure of in this life, son. But black women and their hair? That, my boy, is something you can count on. She'll be here," I told him. Sure enough, at precisely 4:55, a sleek black town car pulled up to the front of Diana's Salon and Spa in the strip mall across the street from us, followed by a black Escalade. Two men got out of the SUV and stood watch, while the town car driver got out and opened the back door to help my sister-in-law, Chippy, out of the back. I watched her walk into the salon, surrounded by her security team. It had been almost 15 years since I'd seen her. From what I could see, she was maybe a few pounds heavier, but she still looked pretty much the same. Chippy had always been a good-looking woman, and considering she'd kept this standing appointment at the same salon for all these years, she'd worked hard to maintain her looks. Someone else might consider Elsie a lucky man to have a wife like Chippy, but I knew the truth about her. She was a conniving backstabber just like him. Once she was safely inside, the driver got back into the town car and drove off, while the two men positioned themselves at the front door. The SUV turned into the parking lot of the salon and drove around back. We waited another 20 minutes before I finally told Curtis, "Okay, drive around back, slowly." He did as I instructed, and when he turned into the parking lot, I could see two men posted at the back door. We were still several yards away, so I told him, "Park here and wait for my signal." I took out my 9mm and twisted the silencer on the barrel before I stepped out of the van. Casually, I walked along the back side of the building, making sure there were no security cameras in the vicinity. The two guys were so busy talking to one another that they didn't even see me approaching, and the bullets struck them before they realized what was happening. I reached into their pockets and disarmed them, then waved for Curtis, who had parked at the edge of the building. He drove down to where I was, and I tossed the guns I had taken from the now dead men into the van. "Keep an eye on the parking lot and move those bodies over to the side," I told my boys. I trusted them to follow orders, so I didn't wait around to watch them work. I turned the knob on the back door of the salon and slipped inside. I heard the familiar beauty salon sound of women gossiping. "I can't believe her husband had the nerve to tell her that chick was his cousin. He knew he was lying. And so did everyone else. With his trifling ass," one woman was saying. I stepped into what looked like the storage area of the salon. There were shelves holding all types of shampoos and hair dyes, along with towels and boxes. "You know she's gonna stay married to him anyway," I heard another woman respond. I walked past the shelves and arrived in the back of the salon, where a row of hooded dryers lined the walls. I searched for Chippy, but I didn't see her.
"Can I help you?"
a startled woman asked, looking me up and down. "I'm looking for Mrs. Duncan. I'm a member of her security team," I said, when I saw her eyeing the gun that was sticking from the waistband of my pants.
"Oh, she's in the shampoo room," she pointed. "Can you let her know Katrina will be right there?"
"Yes, ma'am," I nodded and went into the room she had directed me to. Sure enough, there was Chippy, all alone, a towel wrapped around her neck and her eyes closed as she laid her head back in one of the porcelain sinks. I eased over beside her and turned on the water, and she jumped a little, but her eyes remained closed.
"Katrina, that water's a little cold.
Make it a little warmer for me, sweetie. I turned the knob on the other side, and the water instantly warmed up. I picked up the rubber spray hose and held it over her head, running my fingers through her soft hair as the water flowed over it.
That feels so nice. With everything going on in my life, I needed this,
Chippy said with a smile. I looked up at the shelf above the sink and spotted a bottle of shampoo. I poured some into my hand and rubbed it into her hair, then began massaging her scalp.
You're being a little rough today, huh?
She opened her eyes, and the look on her face went from surprise to horror as she realized whose hands were on her head.
My, my, my. You've come a long way since the good old days when you worked at Big Sam's, I taunted.
I could see her back stiffen, and she slowly sat up. Water dripped from her hair onto her ears and to her towel-covered shoulders.
Larry?
She questioned nervously.
You don't look happy to see me, Chippy,
I said.
Why is it nobody seems happy to see me these days? Where did you come from?
Oh, I've been around, Chippy. From the corner of my eye, I noticed her hand easing into the large purse on her lap. Then she moved to stand up. I touched her arm and motioned toward the gun in my waistband.
Now, Chippy, you don't want to be responsible for me killing all of the lovely ladies in the salon, do you? That's a lot of blood on your hands.
Miss Chippy, is everything okay?
The shampoo girl walked in and gave Chippy a worried look.
Yes, Katrina. This is my brother-in-law. It's fine,
she answered, her voice sounding tight.
Can you give us a minute?
We're just catching up on old times, which ain't got shit to do with you. I gave her a threatening look, and she quickly walked away.
What do you want, Larry? Chippy asked.
Well, I figured talking to you would be easier than talking to my brother. The last time I tried that, it didn't end well for him, as I'm sure you already know, I said. So, we're gonna go and have a little talk.
Come on.
I've got a car waiting out back.
We can talk right here,
she said as if she had a choice. Get your ass up and let's go, Charlotte. Or, would you rather I put a bullet in your head right now? I said through clenched teeth. Chippy stood up, and I grabbed her by the arm and guided her out the back door.
Sasha, 59. 1 hour earlier. London and I watched as Jamaica John and two guys pulled into a Chinese buffet restaurant that was close enough to his vape shop that they could have walked across the parking lot. We timed getting out of the car perfectly so that we were about 20 feet in front of them as they headed into the restaurant. I never realized it before, maybe because she was always wearing that conservative shit, but London had what guys call a badunkadunk. Her ass was so fat in those jeans, I was starting to understand why Paris was jealous. It didn't take long before they were mumbling to themselves behind us. Once inside the restaurant, we didn't stop at the hostess station. We went straight to the restroom. I think we got their attention. What do you think? London asked, touching up her makeup. I think the big guy took one look at that ass of yours and fell in love. Let me ask you a question. How the hell did you know he was coming here tonight? The boy genius told me. Nevada? She looked confused, but she shouldn't have been. Nevada had a genius IQ of over 170 and was being trained in something by everyone in the family. Yeah, think about it. He has access to Vegas, Uncle L.C., and Orlando's files. He even hacked into Harris's computer when Vegas and Uncle L.C. couldn't get into it last night, I explained. All I had to do was play some tour of duty with him and bring up Jamaica John, and he started telling me the guy's life story. He eats here every Tuesday and Thursday when they serve crab legs. She started to laugh. What's so funny? Nothing big. This just reminds me of Jun Ching and his people in Jamaica. Nevada's like a piece of furniture. He can go anywhere he wants in the Duncan household and gather information because he's invisible. True, but listen. We better get back out there. You deal with him, and I'll distract his friends. I closed my lipstick, placed it in my purse, and reached for the door. Oh, by the way, I want to know where you got all that ass and why it skipped my side of the family. We were laughing as we exited the restroom. Jamaica John and his posse were already at the buffet station, piling food on their plates. London made her way toward them as I headed to the hostess station so we could be seated. Oops, I'm so sorry, I heard her say. I eased a bit closer and saw that she was standing in front of Jamaica John, smiling up at him. No problem, pretty lady. John grinned back at her. Ooh, those look so good. I love crabs. She peered at one of the plates he held, piled high with steamed crab legs. Me too, John said. There's just something about cracking that hardness, then sucking all that juicy meat in your mouth. She bit her bottom lip and raised an eyebrow at him, and John damn near dropped his plate. That's my favorite part, he stuttered. This place has the best ones, I promise. Well, I hope they taste as good as they look. I'll have to try them and see. London winked at him, then turned around to look for me. John barely moved, staring at London like a lovesick high schooler, until one of his men snapped him out of it, and he headed for his table. I couldn't help but laugh and relax a little as I watched from my table near John's. I knew it was his because the jacket hanging on the back of his chair was so big it could only belong to the super-sized Jamaican. The hostess had tried to lead me to the opposite side of the restaurant, but I steered her this way. London slipped into the chair across from me. I made sure she would be seated where John could look directly at her. The hostess brought two glasses of water to the table and then told us we could serve ourselves, so we went up to the buffet. I really didn't care for Chinese, especially at an all-you-can-eat restaurant. To be honest, I really wasn't even hungry, but I put a dab of rice and vegetables along with an egg roll on my plate. London made sure to put crab legs on hers, and she made eye contact with John as we returned to our seats. London picked up one of the legs and cracked it open, seductively placing it in her mouth and sucking it gently. Her eyes were on John the entire time. Damn, bitch, your ass is turning me on with that shit, I teased. Let's hope this shit works, she laughed as she licked her fingers. I looked over my shoulder and saw that not only was John enjoying the way London was devouring her crab legs, but so were his boys. They were staring just as hard, mumbling and nudging him. Oh, it's working, I told her. A few moments later, John wobbled over to our table and asked, You like them? Yeah, London said. I could suck on these all night.
Me told you,
he smiled. You were right. Thank you, she said. My name is John. Nice to meet you, John. I'm Devin, London told him.
Devin, nice to meet you.
I want to take you out tonight. They're having reggae night at my man's club. I can get you in VIP, he said. We're headed over there after we eat. I don't know. My girl and I have plans. London gestured toward me. John looked like he was only now noticing that I was sitting at the table with her.
Oh, bring your girl. She can come with us.
He asked me. You want to come with us? It's fine. We can have some drinks, smoke some weed, dance on the dance floor. Sounds like fun. I nodded, realizing that our night was going to be longer than we had anticipated. No worries, though, because it would all be worth it in the end. We agreed to meet John at his friend's reggae spot, and he walked away. London looked down at her phone and cursed. Shit. I hope the damn hospital hasn't called, or anyone else for that matter. I turned my ringer off. By now, I'm sure the guys at the hospital have realized I gave them the slip. Any missed calls? I asked as she checked the screen.
Nope. Just a text from Mama checking on Harris. I better call her, London said. That would probably be a good idea. I'll keep an eye on these three. Hey, Mom. Yeah, I'm okay. Nothing's changed since you left this morning. They say he's stable, but they don't know how long before he regains consciousness. Yes, I'm going to spend the night here. She glanced over at me with a smirk as she lied her way through a conversation with Aunt Chippy. No, that's okay, Mom. If you can just keep an eye on the girls once you get your hair done, that would be great. You don't need to come to the hospital. I'll call you in the morning. Yes, I'm sure. I love you too. Bye. London ended the call and put away her phone. Damn, you're good. I haven't been giving you enough credit, cousin, I said with a laugh. One thing that London and I had agreed on was that we had to be strategic, which basically meant we couldn't let anyone know what we were doing. Ironically, Harris being in a coma worked to our advantage. The family never questioned London's whereabouts. They always assumed she was at the hospital with him, and they had no idea that most of the time she was with me, working on our quest to find Vinnie Dash. Steering clear of the family had also been easy for me, especially since I hadn't really been saying much since my mother's death. They assumed I was still in mourning. No one suspected what we were doing. The most difficult thing to deal with was ducking the numerous members of security that Uncle L.C. in Vegas had on us 24/7. We had already been gone for a few hours unnoticed, and I hoped that it would continue. One thing was for certain. There was no turning back now.
Chippy, 60. I'd been in more than my fair share of life-threatening situations over the years, but the sense of fear I felt as Larry led me out the back of the hair salon was nothing that I'd ever felt. All I could think about was the number of lives he'd already taken, including Donna's, and the fact that he'd also tried to kill Elsie and Harris, who was still fighting for his life. My fear grew stronger as he pulled me past the dead bodies of my two security men and opened the back door to an old van that was waiting for us. "Get in," Larry commanded. I hesitated, trying to reason with him. "Larry, don't do this." "Get in the fucking car, Chippy," he said even louder. "Aunt Chippy, it's okay. Please just get in the van." I looked up and saw my nephew sitting in the back seat. Kenny was such a handsome boy, and I'd always had a soft spot in my heart for him, even despite everything that was going on. I glanced at the driver and saw that it was his brother, Curtis. I loved him, too, because he was family, but Curtis definitely had more of an edge to him than his younger brother. Larry pushed me hard, and I almost stumbled. Kenny reached his hand out to help me, and I grabbed it to steady myself as I climbed into the back seat beside him.
"Let's go,"
Larry snapped as soon as he got in the front passenger's seat. He slammed the door shut, and Curtis drove off. I wondered how long it was going to take someone to realize that I was gone from the salon, but it didn't matter. I knew that by that time, we would be long gone, and most likely, I'd be dead.
"Kenny, you keep an eye on her. Don't make me have to come back there,"
Larry said with his voice full of evil intentions.
"Don't worry, Aunt Chippy. He's not going to hurt you," Kenny said, trying to reassure me. "He just wants to talk."
"I know your father's way of talking, Kenny." I was trembling, both from fear and the cold water that dripped from my hair, soaking through the towel and down my back. I'm sure he had talks with Frankie, Donna, and Harris, so excuse my skepticism.
"Seriously, Aunt Chippy, we're not going to hurt you," Kenny said.
"You look so much like your mother, Kenny." I purposely brought up Nene to see what type of reaction I would get. Curtis didn't flinch, but I could see a flicker in Kenny's eyes.
"She misses you, boys, and we miss her," Kenny said, smiling happily, until Larry glared into the back seat. "Are you trying to talk my boys into being against me, Chippy?" Larry grumbled. If their mother couldn't talk them into anything, then why would I think I could, Larry?
"Because you think you're better than everyone else."
"Whatever, Larry. You know that's not true," I said, hoping to at least sound brave.
"What do you want? Nobody wants to fight with you, and nobody wants a war."
Larry hesitated, and his brow wrinkled up as if he was confused.
"I want my portion of the business back."
"Larry, you sold your portion of the business, remember?"
"Bullshit! That motherfucker stole it from me, and you know it. He knows it, and everyone knows it."
He screamed, spit flying everywhere. I jumped in my seat, praying I hadn't pushed him too far.
"Okay, Larry," I said quietly. "I'll talk to Elsie.
Get him to give you your portion back. Just calm down, please." That was enough to bring his stress level down a notch, I guess, because he sounded calmer when he said,
"I don't want things to be like this, Chippy. But what kind of father would I be to let everything I worked for be stolen right from under me? Don't you think I want to leave a legacy for my boys? Hell, Chippy, you're Curtis's godmother and Nini's best friend. I tried to talk to your husband. I told him he needs to give me back what's rightfully mine. And you know what he did?"
Larry asked.
"No," I shook my head. "He called me a liar. Now, I may be a lot of things. Hell, I may be crazy. But Chippy, you know I ain't a liar. Don't you?"
"I know that, Larry. At least I used to," I said. In my head, I was thinking, "You might not be a liar, but you try to kill my husband, you psychotic piece of shit." I was scared, but my blood was still boiling as I thought of how close Elsie had come to dying after Larry shot him.
"What's that supposed to mean? You think I'm a liar?"
"It doesn't matter what I think, Larry. You're still going to kill me. You're going to use me to trap Elsie, and then you're going to kill me. You know it, and I know it. You used to be a stand-up guy, Larry. Now? Not so much." I was trying to appeal to a sense of decency or honor in him, if there was any of that left. I had no idea if it would work, but I had to try something. Obviously, I miscalculated, because my words just pissed him off.
"Fuck you, Chippy, with your high and mighty bullshit," he raged. "Then tell me in front of your sons that you're not going to kill me."
He took a breath and held it. The car became so quiet I could hear my heart pounding.
"Tell her, Dad,"
Kenny urged. He sounded like he was pleading, like he wanted to believe his father was a good person. I sensed that I had found a weak spot, so I pressed on it.
"He can't, Kenny.
Because he knew the minute he walked in that salon that he was going to kill me."
"God damn it, you want the truth?"
Larry yelled from the front.
"Yes, Larry. I would like the truth."
I glanced at Kenny, who was hanging on his father's words.
"Yeah. I'm gonna kill you, Chippy. More importantly, I'm going to make that piece of shit brother of mine watch as I cut you one piece at a time."
He held up a switchblade, clicking a button so the knife sprang to life.
"Elsie took my world from me. Now I'm going to take his world from him, and I'm going to start with you."
I looked into his eyes and knew that his face would be the last one I saw before dying. "Dear God," I silently prayed, "help me."
"These boys and Nini are your world, Larry," I said, refusing to give up just yet. "Do you want them to have to fight with my boys for the rest of their lives? Like the Hatfields and the McCoys? Because if you kill Elsie or me, my boys will never give up." "Neither will mine,"
Larry replied, pridefully.
"Pop, what are you saying?"
Kenny yelled out, sounding distressed.
You said you weren't going to hurt her. You promised. Shut the fuck up, boy.
Larry growled, the knife still pointed at me.
She's just as evil and conniving as Elsie is.
I'm not so sure they're the ones who are evil. Suddenly, Kenny reached over the seat and pushed Larry's hand, gripping it as he yelled at me,
Get out, Aunt Chippy! Open the door and get out now!
The van swerved as Curtis was distracted by the commotion. The car behind us blew its horn. I was confused for a brief moment. Then I grabbed the handle and opened the door. I can't say for certain, but I think Kenny pushed me out onto the street. Thank God we had been on a narrow city street and he wasn't traveling too fast. Or I might have died from the fall. My body tumbled against the pavement, and I cried out in both panic and pain. I lifted my head in time to see the van stop and Larry's door open, but then he must have realized there were witnesses around, because the door closed again, and the van sped off down the street.
Oh my God! Are you okay?
I heard a woman screaming behind me, just before I passed out.
Sasha, 61.
Are you having fun? John yelled over the loud music. It wasn't a very large club, but the crowd was decent, and the DJ was popping. I spent most of the night in VIP, declining invitations from various men offering everything from drinks to straight-up dick. London hadn't left John's side. They had danced, talked, and flirted all night. She had him eating out of the palm of her hand, literally, as she plucked a lemon wedge from the center of the table and put it in his mouth so that he could take shots of tequila.
Mm-hmm,
London nodded. Come home with me. He leaned toward her.
You have to ask her.
London tossed a shot back and pointed at me.
She's my girl.
I want to, but the only guys I'm allowed to get with are the ones we get with together. John's eyes widened, and he smiled at me.
Is that true?
You're a big man, but do you really think you can handle both of us? I said with a wink.
Hell yeah!
Not wasting another second, he paid the tab, and within minutes we were headed out.
Are you sure you're down for this?
I asked London a while later, as we followed John to his apartment.
Why would you even ask that? I'm the one who initiated this shit,
London replied. I got serious.
Because shit is probably gonna get real once we get inside this fat fucker's place. I know you're married, so if you don't wanna...
She stopped me before I could finish. Look, I told you I was ready, and I am. If he knows where Vinnie Dash is, I'm gonna make sure he tells us.
London nodded, staring straight ahead with a look of resolve.
Let's go. We had just pulled up and parked behind Jamaica John's car in front of a small house. Jamaica John was waiting for us in the front when we got out of the car. He unlocked the door, and we followed him inside.
You going on a trip?
I asked, noticing two suitcases sitting near the doorway.
Vacation,
Jamaica John said, offering no more detail as he locked the door behind us.
Where are you going?
Somewhere warm,
he snapped. It was obvious he didn't want to give up any details, so I left it alone. I didn't want to piss him off before we had barely gotten in the front door. He led us into a small living area and turned on the lights. It was a typical bachelor pad, with a black faux leather sofa and chair, black lacquer coffee and end tables, and a large painting of a half-naked woman on the wall.
This is nice, London lied as she looked around.
You want some smoke?
He reached into a jar on his mantle and took out a plastic sack of weed.
Sure,
I shrugged. London didn't look like she wanted to be a willing participant. I said, Do you still have to pee, Devin?
Huh?
You said you had to pee when we were in the car, remember?
Oh, yeah,
she nodded.
Bathroom is down the hall,
John said, sitting on the sofa to roll a blunt. Once it was lit, he took a long drag, then passed it to me. After taking a pull,
I went and kneeled in front of him, blowing the smoke in his face. He closed his eyes and inhaled, smiling. Then I took off my shirt. John stared at my perky breasts, looking like he wanted to devour me. "You want to go in your room and get started without her?" I suggested. He reached out, and his pudgy fingers rubbed against my lace bra. "You fine as fuck, you know that?" "I do," I nodded. "Come on." He struggled to get off the sofa, and I contained my laughter. He took me by the hand and led me up the narrow staircase into his bedroom. There were clothes on his bed, which he quickly knocked onto the floor. Taking another hit off the blunt, he grabbed me into his arms and kissed me. My first instinct was to gag, but I calmed down and forced myself to kiss him back. I pushed him onto the bed, then straddled him, took the blunt from his hand, and put it into an ashtray on the nightstand, where another half-smoked blunt was resting. I reached into his sweatpants and was surprised by what I felt. Jamaica John's dick was just as large as his body. If it had been attached to someone better looking, I might have been able to enjoy myself. But what the hell? I wasn't there to have fun. I was there to do a job, so I got to work, stroking and pulling on it until he closed his eyes and started moaning. "You like that?" I ran my finger gently back and forth against his swollen head. "Suck it," he whispered. I frowned, because putting his dick in my mouth was not what I had planned on doing. "I will," I lied, standing up and unzipping my skirt. It fell to the floor, and John became even more aroused as he stared at me, standing in front of him dressed in only a bra, thong, garter, stockings, and stiletto boots. I performed a mini striptease as I eased out of my boots and unrolled the stockings one by one, then used them to tie him to the bedpost. It always amazed me how easy it was to get these horny motherfuckers tied up. "Shit," he whispered, as I ran my fingers down the side of his face and down his body. "You ready?" "Fuck yeah," he said eagerly. "Good." "Devin, he's ready," I called out. What we are about to do is always better with three. London walked in, gun in hand, and aimed it at him. She handed me another weapon. John shook his head as if he had known all along that it was too good to be true. Betty was feeling pretty stupid now. "What you want? I got no money here. All I got is weed." "We don't want no fucking money, John," London told him. "We want information." "What? What you asking about? Me don't know nothing," he yelled. "Shut the fuck up and listen, you fat fuck. You know a lot and we know it. Now tell us about Larry Duncan," I commanded him.
"Me don't know no Larry Duncan."
"Everyone knows about Larry Duncan," I spewed. "There's 500 large on his head." Whap! I slapped him across the face. For a second, it looked like he was more turned on than fearful of my assault. But when he tugged on the restraints and realized he was stuck, then his arousal turned into anger.
"Yo, bitch!
Where the fuck is Larry Duncan?" I put the gun to his temple.
"I don't know. The number he gave me no work."
He was sweating profusely.
"Where the fuck is Vinnie Dash?" London asked,
taking a step closer to the bed. Jamaica John tried to pull himself free, but I had tied him in such a way that he couldn't escape.
"I don't know."
"Stop fucking lying to us, John. We already know that you were the one who orchestrated the drug deal between Larry and Vinny." I aimed the gun at his head. That was enough to make him suddenly remember that he did, in fact, know something about Vinny Dash.
"Vinny is in the wind. He was in Jamaica, but he disappeared. Nobody knows where the fuck he is,"
John said, as he continued to struggle. Sweat was dripping down his face and his neck. His shirt was now sticking to his body.
"Lying motherfucker. You know what? I'm tired of this shit."
London left the room and returned with a large knife. I looked at her.
"What the fuck are you gonna do with that?"
"I'm about to neuter this bastard. Seems like the only thing these men understand is their dicks being cut off," she said angrily. "I ain't got time for games."
I gotta get back to the hospital before Daddy finds out I'm gone. So I'm about to cut his dick off, inch by inch, until he tells us what we want to know. She looked so serious that even I couldn't tell if she really intended to do it. Dude, if I were you, I'd start talking, or that dick you were just begging me to suck is gonna be gone. London moved closer, and for the first time, I saw actual fear in John's face.
No!
He hollered, and started violently thrashing his huge body to the point I thought he might break the bed. Then, all the flaying ended abruptly. He screamed out in pain, and then took a deep breath before going limp. His eyes were open, but they looked empty, staring at nothing. What the fuck happened? I asked London. I don't know. I think he had a heart attack. She placed two fingers on his neck. He's dead. Shit, what the fuck do we do now? She said breathlessly. I don't know. Search his shit while I put my clothes on, I said, stepping into my skirt. I was leaning against the wall to put on my boots when I noticed London going through his dressers. Did you find anything? Nothing, she said, as she rummaged through the clothes and tossed them on the floor. Check his pants pockets, I suggested. London went into his pockets and pulled out a cell phone. She looked down at the screen and let out a little laugh. You're not gonna believe this, but his phone isn't even locked. Who doesn't lock their phone in this day and age? Who cares? Check his text messages. See if he has anything from Vinny or Larry. Bingo. He has a text message from VD that came in 2 days ago. What's it say? London scrolled through his phone and read, Leaving Jamaica. Meet me at the marina in 3 days with my money. What marina? I asked. I don't know. John just texted back, okay, but 3 days is tomorrow. Well, we know one thing. He's going somewhere warm. I finished dressing and picked up my gun. Give me his phone. London did as I asked, and I went into his email. A smile spread across my face when I found what I had hoped would be there. He's got a one-way ticket to Jacksonville, Florida, for tomorrow afternoon.
Kenny, 62.
Pull this fucking van over. Pull it over, my dad screamed, repeatedly slamming his hand on the dashboard like a maniac.
He'd been screaming, yelling, and punching the dash nonstop for nearly 20 minutes. Curtis just ignored him, driving until we'd crossed well over the Queens Long Island border. I was scared, because most of his tirade had something to do with me and how he wanted to rip my throat out and shit down my neck. Curtis finally pulled into the driveway of the safe house, and my father, who looked like he was about to have a damn stroke, started coming over the seat of the van after me. At that point, all I wanted to do was get as far away from him as possible, because I couldn't be sure if he'd lost it enough to make me his next victim. The van had barely come to a stop when I jumped out headed toward the street. I had barely walked 20 feet from the van when he grabbed me from behind, spinning me around.
So what? You too good for us now, you fucking traitor? My dad growled just before he punched me in the stomach. You pussy-ass mama's boy.
I doubled over in pain and stumbled backward. Just as I gathered enough strength to stand back up, he charged at me. This time, I was ready and blocked him in time, which angered him even more. Not only was my dad a tall man, but he was also as strong as an ox for his age. It was natural strength that was more like a gift, because he almost never worked out to maintain it. What he didn't realize was that although I wasn't as cocky as he and Curtis, I'd been blessed with his genetics and had that same natural strength. He underestimated me, mainly because I allowed him to smack me around. He glared at me, his eyes full of anger, and I retaliated with the same stare. He came at me again, and we locked like two pit bulls ready to fight to the death. We wrestled one another to the ground, grunting as we exchanged blows.
Kenny, Dad, stop it, stop!
Curtis yelled as he tried to separate us. It took him a minute, but finally he got enough space to push us apart. I leaned against the car, my hands on my knees, trying to catch my breath.
What the fuck is wrong with you? Why'd you let her go? My dad spat at me. You said you weren't gonna kill her, I panted, positioning myself in a defensive posture in case he tried to attack me again. I didn't say I wasn't going to kill her. I said I wasn't going to kill her there at the fucking beauty shop. He began pacing like the madman he was. Now you've gone and fucked everything up. Aunt Chippy did nothing wrong. She's always been nice to me and Curtis. This bullshit is between you and L.C. She has nothing to do with it. How'd you like it if L.C. went after Mom? You're a fucking disgrace. You've ruined it. I was going to take away the one thing L.C. loved more than anything, and you messed it up. He kept storming up and down the sidewalk, shaking his head while he talked. Then he stopped, turning toward the steps to the house. I know, Mama. We're going to bring it inside. He turned back to me. You heard your grandmother. Let's bring it inside. And don't think I ain't going to kick your ass when we get in there. Will you stop fucking talking to her? I yelled at him. I just couldn't take it anymore. What are you talking about? I pointed at the door he'd been looking at. I'm talking about the fact that there's nobody over there. That Grandma Betty's been dead 20 years. You little disrespectful bastard. He charged at me again, but this time Curtis grabbed him. This entire time I've been quiet about it, and so has Curtis. We've been avoiding sitting in the seats and making accommodations for a woman that's been fucking dead for over 20 years. Wake up, Dad. She's not here. So stop talking to her. Leave it alone, Kenny, Curtis warned, struggling to hold him back. Sorry, but I can't do that, Kurt. Not anymore. I can't turn a blind eye anymore. Our father is mentally ill, and he needs to be hospitalized. Uncle L.C. and them were right to have him locked away, I said, finally unburdening myself of the guilt that had been building inside of me. We'd been enabling my father to be as crazy and dangerous as everyone had tried to tell us he was. My dad reached his arm behind Curtis, snatching the gun my brother always carried. He pointed it at me. Say it again, and you're going to be the one dead, he snapped. You disrespectful motherfucker. Dad, it's okay, Curtis eased in front of him in an effort to get him to lower the gun. I could see the tears forming in my brother's eyes, and my heart raced. Please, please, Dad, lower the gun. He's crazy, Kurt, I whispered, now fighting my own tears. My dad looked at Curtis and said, Curtis, go take your grandma inside the house and y'all get ready, because we're going to have to move out this house. The neighbors are watching us. Okay, Dad, but first, please give me the gun, Curtis pleaded. My dad and I stood in the middle of the driveway, neither one of us moving. I steadied my breathing, finding solace in believing my brother loved me enough that he was standing in the way of a bullet. For a brief second, I wanted him to shoot me. Yeah, Grandma Betty, we're coming right now, Curtis suddenly said, his voice sounding stiff. Pop, Grandma Betty said come on and get in the van with her. What? My dad finally turned away from me. Curtis gently took the gun from him and pointed to the truck. She's waiting. We'd better hurry up before she starts cussing. Oh, yeah, you're right. My dad walked over and opened the backside door. Come on, Mama. Kurt, let's go. Kurt, he's crazy. He's going to get you killed, I said as he followed him to the van. Kurt stopped and turned to me. I got to go with him, Kenny. I'm all he's got. What about me? I asked. Go home, Kenny. You always got Ma. He got in the van, and I watched helplessly as he backed it up, then drove away.
L.C., 63. An array of emotions ran through me. As soon as I got the call that my wife had escaped an attempted abduction, I was both relieved and angry. Just a few minutes before, Vegas had received word that two of the men who were assigned to her detail were now dead, and Chippy was missing. I immediately knew that my brother had taken her, and fear seized my heart until I received the call a half hour ago that she was safe. She was now on her way home with Junior, who was closest to her location. How the hell did they get to her, Vegas? I asked. I don't know, Pop. She had 6 guys on her detail, and one of them was your guy, Willie. Wasn't much I could say bad about Willie. He was a retired cop and Navy SEAL. The front door opened, and Chippy walked in. I rushed over and held my wife as Junior escorted her into our home. Are you okay?
I'm all right, Elsie.
Chippy sobbed into my chest. Did that bastard touch you? I noticed the blood stains on the arm of her blouse.
No, he didn't hurt me. I scraped my arm when I jumped out of the van.
Her hair was standing all over her head and her clothes were disheveled. But she had never looked more beautiful to me than at that moment. I kissed her forehead and hugged her again.
Ma!
Paris ran down the stairs and over to her mother, her face full of tears.
I'm okay, baby,
Chippy assured her.
I'm gonna kill him, Ma. I promise, if it's the last thing that I do,
Paris snapped.
We've gotta find him first,
Rio commented, walking over and hugging his mother.
Trust me, we're gonna find him,
Vegas said.
Ma, did he say anything?
Orlando asked.
Not really. He just kept saying that he wanted his portion of the business that your father stole from him.
Chippy looked at me.
I'll tell you one thing, Elsie. He's never gonna stop.
Yeah, and he's knocking us off one by one,
Rio said. He wasn't entirely wrong to be worried either. Now that I knew Larry could get at us like this, the situation had risen to a whole new level of danger.
I want this entire family on fucking lockdown. Everyone needs to be home now. Everyone. No one is to leave this compound without my permission. Am I understood?
I announced.
Nevada, where is he?
Chippy started to panic.
I'm right here, Grandma.
Nevada hugged Chippy, and she held on to him. But you could see he was angry.
Junior, where's Sonia?
Chippy asked.
She's upstairs with the kids. She's safe, Ma,
Orlando said, putting his arm around her.
And so are you. We all are.
I don't know about that,
Vegas said, removing his phone from his ear. What the hell do you mean? I asked, my concern matching the look on my wife's face.
That was Bruce from London and Harris's security detail. London and Sasha never made it to the hospital. They aren't there,
Vegas told me.
What the hell do you mean they never made it?
I demanded.
That's impossible. I talked to London early and she said she was already at the hospital and Sasha was with her. She said they were going to spend the night.
Chippy turned and looked at me. Any relief I had felt when Chippy returned home was gone, replaced by fear for my first daughter and my niece.
Where the fuck are they?
I snapped, and damn near everyone in the room jumped.
We're trying to reach them now. Neither one of them are answering their phones,
Vegas replied.
Oh my God, LC. He has them. He has Sasha in London. How are we going to find them?
Chippy's eyes filled with tears. I put my arm around her and asked myself the same question. We don't know that, Chippy, I whispered into her still damp hair.
Why don't you just ping their phones, Grandpa?
Nevada asked. Good thinking. I looked over at my grandson and then to his father and nodded.
I'm already on it, Pop,
Vegas said. Orlando, you take a team and check it out. Junior and Nevada will get you within a few blocks of the ping point. If you find something, don't try to be a hero. Wait for us before you go charging in. We may have to call the authorities in. There's been a lot of bloodshed associated with our name, so we want the cops on our payroll to handle it.
I got it,
Orlando said, heading for the door at the same time Nevada and Junior headed for the den. My cell phone rang, and I took it out of my pocket. Seeing the name on the screen, I frowned. Chippy, are you butt-dialing me?
No, my phone is in my purse,
she said. And then she realized where her purse was. Her eyes got wide.
Larry took it from me when we got in the van because he knew I had a gun in it.
I looked down at the phone again and inhaled deeply to steady myself before I hit the answer button. Larry.
How are you, Elsie?
It's good to hear your voice. Not!
The sound of his voice caused my already brewing anger to build, but I forced myself to remain calm. I knew handling it with caution was critical. My initial instinct was to demand the whereabouts of London and Sasha, but my better judgment made me wait.
Oh, by the way, did Chippy make it home okay?
We spent a little time together, he said with a sick laugh. I'm trying to remain calm, Larry. I told him, you're making it very difficult.
LC, you don't want to talk about how difficult you made my life, do you?
Larry asked. The good news was that he didn't make mention of London or Sasha, which made me think he might not have them. Otherwise, he would have been trying to use them from the start to throw me off balance. Still, I couldn't be sure, so I was determined to get my brother and his behavior under control some way. I had to gain the upper hand.
This has got to stop, I told him. You have...
Don't fucking tell me what I've done! What about what you've done, LC? This is all your fucking fault. You were the one who had me locked away and stole my share of the company. You took everything from me. My life, my family, my money.
Larry, you know none of that's true.
Stop fucking lying to me, LC. This is why I shot your ass last time we were together. Because you keep fucking lying.
Larry screamed like a madman. What the fuck do you want, Larry? Let's just handle this man to man, once and for all. I said, still speaking quietly, so as not to set him off any worse than he already was. Larry laughed.
Man to man? You don't really want to do that, little brother. You were never that good, and never will be.
Try me and see, I suggested.
You know what? You're right. Let's just handle this shit and finally get it over with, he said. It's been going on long enough.
I felt a brief second of relief. At least now I would know where he was. You name the place.
I'm taking Mama back home for a few days, so why don't we meet back where it all started?
I ignored his reference to my mother. His insistence that she was still alive was more proof of how far gone he was, and pointing it out to him might just send him over the edge. I'll be there tomorrow afternoon, I said.
Take your time. It's going to take me at least a few days to get there. Unlike you, I don't have a Learjet. At least not yet.
He hung up.
Larry, 64. I stood smoking a cigarette as I watched Curtis prep the back of the van. It looked as if I was going to be able to kill two birds with one stone, having a face-to-face with my brother and handling my business with Vinny, who said he would lower his price to $20,000 a kilo if I met him down in Florida and took all his product today. So, wasting no time, Curtis, Mama, and I loaded up the old van and headed down I-95. We had arrived in Jacksonville about an hour ago to meet Vinny at a warehouse near the Julington Creek Pier.
What about Kenny? Curtis asked.
What about him? I frowned. It's clear that your brother don't give a shit about us. Therefore, we ain't gonna give a shit about him. We got business to take care of. I don't have time to deal with his temperamental ass.
But that...
Curtis, shut the fuck up about your brother. Now... If you're that worried about his ass, you can get the fuck out and stay here. Is that what you want to do?
No, sir.
Curtis sighed, then walked over and patted my back. I'm sorry, son. It's just... Your brother... He broke my heart. I said sadly. Go get those bags. Vinny is here. Vinny was 15 minutes late when he walked up wearing an all-white linen suit and a pair of leather flip-flops, looking like a tourist.
Larry Duncan.
He extended his hand to greet me. I looked at it and said, You got my shit, Vinny? Vinny lowered his hand, and his smile weakened. You got my money? Curtis walked over and tossed him a duffel bag full of cash. Here. He nodded and pointed to a box truck. Dope is in the back. I motioned for Curtis to check it out, and Vinny tossed him the keys. You got that other thing for me? I asked. Vinny shrugged and said, Sure thing, Larry. Got it right here. He handed me a brown leather briefcase. I took it out of his hand and gave him a knapsack of money. Is that it? He handed me a telephone. All you have to do is call me on the cell, and everything will be taken care of. Thanks, Vinny. I put the briefcase on the floor in the back seat. Everything was falling into place. Where are you heading next? I asked him. No particular destination. I heard Santorini is nice this time of year. I might head there. Vinny shrugged. Or I might hit up Italy. Check out where the Dash family got their start. Aight, Dad, we're loaded. Curtis tossed Vinny the keys. Well, once again, Larry Duncan, it's been great doing business with you. Vinny grinned, extending his hand a second time. This time, I took it. Good luck dealing with your brother. I lifted the phone he'd given me and said, I'll call you and let you know. He laughed, picking up the duffel bag and starting to walk away. He's just gonna walk down the street with $1 million in cash? Curtis asked. Hey, like Mama always says, not my monkey, not my circus. I took a deep breath. Come on, we have a lot of things to do if we're going to meet with the infamous L.C. Duncan.
Orlando, 65. Pinging London and Sasha's phone hadn't given us an exact location, just a vicinity, which turned out to be LaGuardia Airport. We arrived at the terminal with 5 cars and 10 men and began searching for my sister and cousin, but we came up empty until about an hour into the search when Nevada gave me a call. Sup, nephew? Well, Uncle O, I think we have a problem. I've been pinging Aunt London's and Sasha's phones, and all of a sudden nothing is coming back. I didn't like the sound of that. What's that mean, Nevada? Oh, it's Junior. My brother cut in. What it means is that either they turned their phones off or someone did it for them. You guys find anything at the terminals? Nothing. But we still got a lot of ground to cover. I could use some help. Roger that. I'm gonna head over there with my guys right after our brief pop in Vegas. There is one thing we haven't thought of, Nevada cut in. They are at an airport. What if they're on a plane? We wouldn't get a signal if they're in the air, he told me. Give me a sec. Let me check something real quick. Wait for my call. The boy genius hung up without waiting for my response. It took him nearly 10 minutes to call me back. Damn, took you long enough. What were you doing? I asked. Hacking into Aunt London's American Express account to see if she used her card today, he said meekly, because he'd been told about hacking into accounts. Uncle Junior said it was okay. Then you're golden. You find anything? I asked. He hesitated, then said, Looks like she was at the Lucky Dragon Buffet in the Bronx, municipal parking lot in Manhattan, purchased tickets on Delta Airlines, and has a hotel room being held at the Marriott. Which Marriott, I asked. Sawgrass, Marriott Golf Resort and Spa in Jacksonville, Florida. Good job, nephew. I'm handing you my title. You officially the smartest one in the family. I could hear Junior laughing in the background. Hey, Junior, tell Pop I'm headed to Florida. I'll meet you guys down at Waycross once I find out what the hell these two are up to. Will do, O. Be safe. Smack both of them upside the head for me. We don't have time for this BS. Tell me about it. 5 hours later, I stepped off the elevator onto the 8th floor of the Sawgrass Hotel and continued down the hallway until I arrived at room 878. Nevada had used his hacking skills to give me the room number of their suite. With a full detail of men behind me, I tried my best to calm down a bit and then tapped on the door, lightly at first. When there was no response, I knocked a little harder and then checked my watch. It was almost 3 in the morning, and they were probably asleep, but I didn't care. I knocked again, this time hard and loud. I finally heard muffled sounds, and then...